morning. Before I talk about Cornell, I'd like to talk about something a little broader than that. And that has to do with where we are currently in the understanding of life. Now, if you look at all the exploits that humans have had over the history of human existence and societies, most of it's been driven by interest in themselves and their relationship to life and the universe around them. This information has been gathered and collected both through passage through societies and by word of mouth, but also through collection of literature. So if you were to go into one of the libraries on campus, for example, Mann Library, and just walk through the stacks, you would find a tremendous reservoir of information collected by previous human beings on perhaps any topic you could imagine. This is our legacy. This is the basis of our existence and our society and our understanding of ourselves. Now, there's another type of information which is even more intrinsic to us than the literature we create, and that's the information that actually prescribes life. That's the basic blueprints behind life, not only human beings, but every other life form on this planet. Now, if you look at science, and the science of life and biology, and ask, how has this information been collected, and where do we sit today with regard to the information? You'll quickly realize that we are headed into a revolution of information collection that's unparalleled in any time in human existence. Just to give an example, with respect to the human being, you probably can't escape the public literature and the Human Genome Project, but to put it in a nutshell, the goal is to decipher all of the genes that make up a human being, to read out the blueprints of the DNA. There's some 100 or 120,000 of these, and it's these together that are responsible for the individual and the differences between individuals. Now, all of the development of medicine, all the development of knowledge of life and so forth, has been based upon some pieces of this information. But the information we had has been very limited. Until about 10 years ago, of those 100,000 bits of information, we had knowledge on only a few hundred. 5 years ago, we had knowledge on perhaps 10,000. Even though we didn't know what all of those did, we had the information on them. Within the next year, we'll have the complete blueprint of the human being deciphered, the DNA sequence. And within the next 5 years, we'll have the gene sequences for probably 100 other organisms. So this would be equivalent to going from walking into a library that perhaps had 1,000 volumes of books and come back the next week and find out there were 100,000 books, none of which you'd read before. This is what we're faced with in biology. And what's behind this is a set of technologies that's allowed creation of this information and deciphering of the information. So what's happening now with these genome projects, and I'll tell you a little bit about what genomics is that we're quickly unraveling the blueprints of humans and many other organisms, and we're creating a situation where biology is becoming limited not by information, which it was before, but by our ability to understand and manage information. What this is going to create is a change in biological sciences from a more cottage industry of individuals working in their own lab in isolation to groups of individuals working together in networks within universities and across universities. And this is something for which no university is prepared. It's a paradigm that never has existed in biology. It did come into existence in physics. They underwent this revolution, but it's something biologists have not done. The other thing this is going to create is an opportunity for discoveries that will affect every aspect of human existence. So genomics is a word you wonder where someone created the word, and probably they were not someone who was very literate because it's not a great word to be using. But to give you an idea, what's held under this umbrella of genomics is really a set of tools which create possibilities. It in itself is not necessarily a particular discipline, but it's a set of tools that allow a discipline to be accelerated. Such things as rapid DNA sequencing, methods for understanding the expression of genes and the functions of genes. Just a few of the predicted outcomes of genomics that will affect our lives First has to do with human health. As I mentioned that until recently, we only had knowledge of a thousand or so genes in the human genome, and only the function of a small number of those were known. Yet all of the pharmaceuticals, all of the medical science was developed on the basis of that fairly limited bit of information. Imagine going from that to having all of the information available. What it creates is the opportunity to go from a medical science which is based on treating symptoms of diseases to actually treating causes of diseases. Medicine typically deals with symptoms. Symptoms can be categorized and treated with a set of pharmaceuticals or other treatments, but typically symptoms have different reasons for different individuals because we're all genetically different and we all have our own life histories. So currently there's huge investments in the pharmaceutical industry to utilize genomic information to create a new wave of pharmaceuticals which will be based upon the causes of disease and tailored to the individual such that the effectiveness should increase and the side effects should decrease. The second has to do with agriculture. Most people, I don't think, realize this, and this is probably part of the reason there's such concern about genetics and genetic engineering of plants and animals. But agriculture, in its basic sense, is not a natural proposition. Humans only began having settled agriculture some 10,000 years ago. Prior to that, there were no domesticated plants or animals. And the process of domestication itself created a very abnormal situation for the Earth. That is that we take a few selected species, select them to produce something that we want as human beings, but not necessarily beneficial for the plant or animal, and then produce them over very large acreages throughout the world at the expense of the native fauna and flora. Now, I'm not maligning agriculture. We wouldn't exist as a society, as a cultured society without it, but this is the underpinning of our existence. And the price is fairly high. You can't have escaped the knowledge that a lot of the groundwater pollution and chemicals that wind up in our life cycle come through agricultural usage. Without these chemicals and these processes, we couldn't produce the food that feeds the world. But as we gain knowledge of the genomics and genes of plants, we have the opportunity to produce plants that can protect themselves naturally from environmental dangers such as pests or diseases or insects, or utilize the natural nutrition in the soils more effectively. We'll soon have the complete sequence of a plant genome. We finished within 6 months, and the possibilities for producing plants that have either improved nutritional values or able to produce with less petroleum pesticide input is very likely. Second has to do with the basis of manufacturing. If you ask what really has propelled the modern society, a lot of it has to do with petroleum, both as an energy source and a raw material. A large portion of the things you manufacture come from petroleum, and petroleum, as you may know, is an organic chemical. But it's one for which there is a limited supply, and the cost of extracting it, shipping it, and working with it can be high both environmentally and just in terms of cost itself. But these organic chemicals that are found in petroleum, or which we modify from petroleum, can all be produced through life forms. In fact, plants have all the basic building blocks to make any organic chemical used for any manufacturing process. So in the long term, the source of our manufacturing materials will come from plants, which are the only renewable resource that can harvest the sun's energy, and not from petroleum. And through this knowledge of the genes of plants, we'll be in a position to create these plants and microbes as renewable biofactories to produce tailored organic chemicals. Fourth has to do with meeting the world's food needs. Cornell especially has been a university that's been invested globally in agriculture, has a long-standing history in international agriculture, and we have a great purpose as a university and as individuals to be concerned with the world food supply. You're all familiar with the Green Revolution, which took place in the 1960s, which greatly increased food production and saved many lives and turned a number of cultures around. But this was done through two processes. One was genetics, through plant breeding, which is a genetic process, and the other is through doing that process in conjunction with greater use of fertilizers and pesticides that would allow production much more intensive production. The next Green Revolution will not take place in that way. It'll have to take place through genetic modifications because we can't first afford the petroleum input nor the environmental cost of that. The final thing is more difficult to put your arms around, but it's nonetheless more real. As any society or any time in history that we've had fundamental discoveries about things that affect our perception, it's changed our view of life. From the discoveries that the Earth was no longer believed to be the center of the universe, it was a very profound change of how people thought of themselves, as was the Darwinian theory of evolution, that we have all some relationship and that life is change. We're about to unravel the blueprints of a large number of organisms. And what this does initially is to make us realize that everything is related. All of us are related to each other, even though we have diversities, and we're related to every other life form on this planet. And the set of sequences that are coming from genomics allows us to understand exactly the relationship and exactly how genes have been shared between individuals, between species, and through time. So it's very likely our basic understanding and of ourselves and life, where life came from, and perhaps where life is going, will change fairly rapidly over the next 20 years. But that was a very long backdrop to what should Cornell be doing, so I'll try to make this fairly short. Cornell, as a leading research and education institution, has to have an interest in what's taking place in the life sciences. When a field changes so rapidly and dramatically as life sciences now through genomics, it creates both risk and opportunities. The opportunities, of course, is a huge acceleration in understanding and the byproducts of that understanding, and to be a place where that can happen. The risk is that we aren't the place where that happens and we become spectators in one of the greatest scientific revolutions ever. We're not alone in this possibility and risk situation. All universities have this same problem and possibility. All of them will become obsolete to some extent to the other if they don't change their course and take on a new perspective to life sciences. I've been acting chair of a group of faculty which is comprised of representatives from 20 departments and 6 colleges on campus, which starting 3 years ago began to develop the concepts of how a university like Cornell should proceed into the future with respect to life sciences in light of the genomics revolution. What we've proposed is a new initiative called the Genomics Initiative, which would do a number of things. But first to point out, why should Cornell be positioned to try to take a leading position in research and education in life sciences and genomics? First has to do with our breadth. We're a very broad-based university. We have animal, plant, and microbe research. We're a land-grant institution involved in agriculture. We have a biological science program, which is very broad. Engineering College, which is very well situated, has developed many new technologies related to other things besides life sciences, and is now investing very heavily in the life sciences through nanobiotechnology. We have the College of Medicine and the Veterinary College. We also have one of the strongest computing facilities in the nation, very strong computer science department, and the Theory Center, which is a supercomputing facility. It'd be very difficult to find any university that had the possibilities of Cornell in terms of life sciences. What we proposed is an initiative which would have 6 thrusts. 3 would be based along biological themes: mammalian, which would include animal science, veterinary medicine, medical college, everything related to mammals, because this information about sequences relate to everything. If you're interested in humans, you're just as likely to find the discoveries working on a mouse or a dog. Plant genomics, microbial genomics, 2 technology platforms. One is computational genomics, the other is the technology and innovation which comes out of engineering. And finally, a recreation of our teaching program in life sciences to be much broader in its base, involving engineering, computation, and the life sciences. One aspect of this would also be outreach. As a society undergoes this transition into the post-genomics era, there are a huge number of questions, philosophical and practical, that we have the responsibility to address as a university. So we'll have to be engaged in outreach programs. So So the program that's been proposed now ties together six colleges and two institutions on campus. One is the Boyce Thompson Institute, the other is the ARS Institute, as well as the six colleges I mentioned. This will be a program probably greater than any other in terms of tying together colleges. We're in the process of setting up a joint recruitment of faculty which are above the department level and in some instances above the college level, so that we're recruiting people to be much more interactive than they were in the past. I have to give credit to the administration. They've been very proactive about this genomics initiative in life sciences, realizing what is at risk, have changed dramatically and are changing a lot of the structures dealing with how departments and colleges work together to produce something that cannot be produced on a much more provincial level. The challenges we face is that we're not the only institution to realize this huge transition. This is from one of the most recent issues of the Chronicles of Higher Education in August. There are at least six other institutions of similar size, if not similar possibility to Cornell, making very large investments in this area, and Cornell is going to have to make both commitments in terms of its future and its planning, but also in terms of resources and fundraising to make this a reality. So with that, I'll stop, and sorry to run over.